Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Pigeon. I'm Joyce Graff and we're delighted to have you with us today. I'm actually on a quilting weekend in Tennessee, but my good friend Mike Lawing is going to run the show today. So welcome, Mike. How are you doing?
Well, I am doing fine, Joyce, and I know you're down probably getting some blues and barbecue in the Memphis area, aren't you?
Oh, not so much. Mostly just sewing. Anyway,
just sewing.
Okay. Yeah. Mike has recently been to a conference of the American Association of Cancer Research, the AACR, which was specialized on health disparities, I believe. So, Mike, you want to tell us a little bit about that? And he met some exciting people who have agreed to join him today. So take it away.
Well, we had an opportunity to attend the Health Disparities Conference for the American Association for Cancer Research as part of their Scientist Survivor Program. The AACR is one of the leading cancer organizations in the country. They've been in existence for well over 100 years. They were actually the first organization devoted to cancer that got started. And they have a program that's fairly unique among the large organizations in that they bring a group of survivors together, and they interact with them in such a way that they have scientists that spend time with them and acknowledge the need for survivors and for patient advocates to be involved in their program. And they're actually focusing more on that in the coming years. They're trying to develop even better programs for that. So we're excited what the AACR is doing as far as bringing advocacy into their picture. A lot of times you'll run into a researcher and have a conversation with them, and when they walk away, they'll tell you, it was good to talk to somebody that's been dealing with cancer from a personal perspective, because we never see those folks, and so that's good. We're dealing with something today, Joyce, that I think is something that many of us need to consider. There's well over a quarter of a million breast cancer patients diagnosed every year in the United States. And there's 41,000 deaths among those breast cancer survivors. But this cancer has more deaths than breast cancer, but yet they only have about 55,000 people that are diagnosed, and it's pancreatic cancer. So I've got a couple of people with us today, Joyce, from the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. And they're going to tell us a little bit about pancreatic cancer. This is Pancreatic Cancer Awareness Month. So with that in mind, I'd like to go ahead and introduce Allison Mayoral. And I think I've got that right. I didn't let it roll off my tongue quite fast enough. But she is the manager of something called Patient Central with the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. Allison, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Yeah, glad to participate.
And I know that we're going to have a lot of questions for you in just a few minutes, and we appreciate you being here. Next guest that we have today, Joyce, is a lady that was with me at the AACR conference. Her name is Annalise Wilson. She is a Patient Central associate, and she spends a lot of time dealing with the actual patients when they call in, and she's a super lady. Allison, welcome to the program, and why don't you tell us a little bit about what you did at the Disparities Conference?
Sure. So thank you, Mike, so much for the beautiful introduction. So for me, being at the Health Disparities Conference, it was a great opportunity to really get some more perspective on how I can best help patients. So, you know, every day I talk with patients, caregivers, and really kind of anyone else affected by pancreatic cancer, and they tell me, you know, Annalise, I'm at a loss here, and I don't know what to do, and I really need some help. And so I feel very blessed that I'm in the role that I am, because I can, you know, reach out to individuals, educate them, and really help them make themselves aware about the disease. And so being with you at the AACR conference was great, because it's something where health disparities, I feel like it's a very silent factor in cancer care. And with pancreatic cancer, it's something where, you know, I see it every day, whether it's racial disparities, economic disparities, or even location. So it's something where I really enjoyed being there, absorbing everything, you know, soaking everything up, and having that chance to bring that back and really help educate patients about their rights.
Well, that's good, Allison. And we appreciate you being here, and you did a tremendous job in representing the pancreatic cancer situation at the conference, and we're so thankful that you were there and participated. Joyce, have you got any questions that come to mind that you want to talk about?
Oh, I was wondering if one of you could please explain what we mean by health disparities. I'm not sure that everyone knows. And I also want to let you know that Robin Martinez has arrived. Robin is the lead coordinator for smartpatients.com and talks a lot with people with pancreatic cancer. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Joyce. Thanks for the introduction. Sorry to be late.
No problem. So what do we mean by health disparities? Annalisa, do you want to talk about that?
Sure. No, that's a great question. I think that's I'm glad you brought that up. So when we think about an individual and their health, there's something called the social determinants of health. So these are things like your income, the environment that you live in, your access to health care. And so these are all things that really influence your path and your journey when it comes to your health. So with health disparities, essentially what they are is they represent that gap where, if we think about, you know, everyone's on the same playing field, a health disparity essentially points out where people might not be on the same playing field. So as I was mentioning earlier, when there are, you know, differences in income. So someone who's making $1 million a year is different than someone making $10,000 a year. There's research to suggest that depending on your racial or ethnic background, that may influence what sort of healthcare opportunities are provided to you and your ability to access care. So essentially, a health disparity points out where there may be gaps in everyone receiving equal health care.
That's a good answer.
The comfort level of people talking about their health with a doctor is also a big factor in healthcare disparity. So that if you say pancreatic enzyme to somebody and they say, huh, as opposed to somebody who says, oh, yeah, I understand that, is going to affect the level of communication that they have with their healthcare professionals, the level of understanding that they have, and probably the level of compliance with care, because they understand more about what they're doing.
Absolutely. So, you know, that's another form of the health disparity is educational access. So, you know, in this case, you know, I've had over a decade of experience in health advocacy, so I could tell you the ins and outs of the healthcare system. But for someone who, you know, for many people that I speak with on a daily basis, this is just their first experience in general with cancer, let alone pancreatic cancer. So when they aren't familiar with these terms, like, you know, what is chemotherapy, you know, what's pancreatic enzymes, as you mentioned, it's really that opportunity for me to use that privilege of having, that educational background to help make sure that, again, that person is on the same playing field and can speak about it just as well as I can.
Allison, I know you're the manager of Patient Central, and could you tell us what Patient Central is with the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm one of the managers here of Patient Central at PanCAN. And Patient Central, it's an informational service. So we have a call-in line, and constituents can also email us with any questions that they have about pancreatic cancer, everything from treatment options to questions about what their doctor said, help with managing symptoms and diet-related issues, questions about or trying to find clinical trials that they might be eligible for, even molecular testing. So Patient Central is really a one-stop shop where people can call, and we don't impose any time limits. We're here to answer their questions and provide support and resources.
And you're available from, 7 to 5, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. See, that's on your website, so I can pull it up and act like I know what I'm talking about. We'll also make sure that, we've got the link to the website and the phone number and all that information. We'll have that, running on our information with this podcast. Robin, you got any questions for Allison?
Do you also work with neuroendocrine tumors of the pancreas?
Yeah, we do. So we do work with patients who have pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors or PNETs. They only make up about 6% of all diagnoses of pancreatic cancer. So our main focus or our main constituent base is people who have adenocarcinoma, which is the most common type of pancreatic cancer. But we do definitely talk to people who have PNETs, and we have resources for them too.
That's great.
Now, you've got a physician directory, so to speak, of doctors throughout the country that are familiar with pancreatic cancer. Is that correct?
Yeah, we do. So we maintain a really comprehensive listing of specialists throughout the whole country who really have a specific interest in pancreatic cancer and who treat a lot of patients. So we can connect or we can provide patients and caregivers with doctors near them who would be more familiar with the different treatment options for the disease.
Okay. Well, that's good. Now, Annalise, what's the benefit of going to a specialist versus just a regular oncologist in a small town when you've got pancreatic cancer?
That's a great question, Mike. So from an organizational standpoint, we recommend that patients do see a pancreatic cancer specialist just because, as Allison mentioned earlier, they're a lot more knowledgeable about the treatment options that exist. So, people are, choosing a healthcare professional and choosing a doctor is very personal, and I think the best perspective to provide is that you want someone that's on your team. So when you think about pancreatic cancer compared to other types of cancers, it's a lot more rare, but it's also a lot more aggressive. And so when you are faced with that challenge, you want to make sure that someone's up to date on the research. They are working with other types of specialists who, might be able to provide some insight onto treatment options. And then also, that they have a comprehensive team. So when people think about treating cancer, they often think about an oncologist, but sometimes you may want to pull in a surgeon. Sometimes you want to pull in a radiation oncologist. Or even when you're thinking about the side effects that come with cancer treatment, you want to make sure you have a team of, nutritionists and pain specialists. So that's something where when you're thinking about community hospitals, sometimes they do have that, but sometimes they don't. So it's important to get connected with a specialist that can really meet and suit all of your needs.
Thank you. Robin, you got anything else?
Yeah, I have another question. I know one of the big problems with pancreatic adenocarcinoma, which is the kind that isn't neuroendocrine, one of the big problems with that is that it's so often discovered very late, usually discovered in stage four. Have we made any progress at all in being able to diagnose pancreatic cancer earlier?
Yeah, research is definitely ongoing to find better early detection options. At this time, it can be so difficult because pancreatic cancer typically produces symptoms that can be very vague and nonspecific. It's also the pancreas, the organ itself, is located deep in the abdomen, so it can't really be felt by a physical exam. So unfortunately, many patients are diagnosed at a later stage when surgery is not an option, because at that point, that's when they're really experiencing more troubling symptoms. Research is ongoing to try to find better early detection tools. Our organization has actually funded a few research grants specifically focused on early detection, and so that research is currently going on. But as of yet, you know, there's no simple blood test, unfortunately, or no simple exam that can diagnose the disease early.
Yeah, we all hope for finding quicker diagnostic methods.
The symptoms of having pancreatic cancer, especially early on, are kind of vague, aren't they, Annalise?
They are. So it's something where, you know, sometimes, so one of the opportunities that I have as well working through the patient central call line is that sometimes we'll have people who are kind of in the midst of diagnosis. So, you know, I always preface and say I'm not a medical professional, so I can't give medical advice, but the least I can do is kind of educate you about the symptoms. And so, you know, the more common symptoms that you see with pancreatic cancer include abdominal or mid-back pain, loss of appetite, jaundice, which is yellowing of the skin and eyes, nausea, weight loss, even changes in stool. So sometimes it might be fatty or greasy or they're floating, and you know, sometimes it's a bit embarrassing for people to talk about, but it's important just because, you know, doctors want to make sure that they're, you know, attacking it head on. So even though they're very vague symptoms, it's important to keep abreast of that and, you know, be aware of it, just because even if it's not pancreatic cancer, wanting to get you linked with a gastroenterologist. I mean, that's usually the first step when you're trying to figure out whether or not you have pancreatic cancer. A gastroenterologist can really take that time to sit with you and to, you know, take the appropriate tests and do the appropriate things to make sure that they are leaving no stone left unturned.
Okay. Now, Allison, are there any clinical trials that's ongoing in the United States for pancreatic cancer, and do you normally make that information available to people that call in to you?
We do, yeah. So there's a great many clinical trials going on throughout the U.S. for pancreatic cancer currently. I don't have the exact number, but it's definitely a few hundred at this time. And we actually have a database of pancreatic cancer clinical trials that we can do personalized searches for people on. So we can input information about their treatment history, the stage that they have, how far they can travel, and we can pull up trials in their area that may potentially be good options for them. That tool is also available online, so patients can search it directly as well to get an idea of what's available in their area.
Okay. Robin, you deal occasionally with some people with pancreatic cancer. What's one of the most commonly asked questions that they ask you?
Just the real basics, like, you know, what do I do? Help. And basically we try to help people find a specialist rather than just a general oncologist, because that makes such a difference in knowing what treatment options are available, knowing how to approach the problem. But unfortunately, it's such an aggressive cancer. It's very frightening, and when it's found late, there are treatments, but they aren't as good as if you can happen to find it early. And sometimes people are lucky and have an incidental finding of pancreatic cancer where, say, they were in a car accident or something, and a CT scan is done, and the radiologist says, hey, you know, you're okay from the car accident, but there's a mass here, and you need to deal with that.
Okay. Annalise, do you have a lot of people that are seeking help for financial assistance, and do you have any resources that you refer them to on that?
Yes, we do. So there's a term called financial toxicity, and Mike, I'm sure you're familiar with it given the conference. And essentially what that means is that at a base level, healthcare is expensive. And when you're being treated for cancer, that can be incredibly expensive. You know, for patients with pancreatic cancer, there's some research that suggests it can be anywhere from mid, $40,000 up to, you know, several hundred thousand dollars. And that's something where, you know, for many of the people that we speak with, they're on a fixed income or their insurance doesn't cover portions of their care. So we often get questions, you know, asking about financial resources. So at this time, we don't provide direct financial assistance, but we are aware of various resources for patients and families. So it can range from, you know, help with prescription assistance, with general household costs, so whether that be food, utility bills, or even transportation as well. So it's the nice part is that there are there's a really collaborative feel to the cancer community, and even with pancreatic cancer, where people are wanting to help and support patients and families because they realize that you know, there's a lot of financial stress that comes with cancer care, and so luckily there are resources out there. So we often encourage people to ask those questions.
Can you help people find appropriate clinical trials?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, we can search our database for them on their behalf and help them narrow down trials that they might be eligible for based on their treatments that they've had and the stage of pancreatic cancer they have and how far they can travel. And we always encourage patients to consider clinical trials because they do provide access to new, potentially better treatments, and they help to advance research in the field.
Yeah, that's a very important thing because clinical trials do offer the latest and greatest, hopefully, treatment.
So, how common is pancreatic cancer compared to other cancers, Annalise? Do you have those figures available?
I do. So it is the 8th most commonly diagnosed cancer in women and the 11th most common in men. So at this point in time, you know, it's still a bit rare. You know, first thing people usually think of is prostate, breast, lung, sometimes colorectal cancer. So it's still a little kind of on the base level, but it is, those numbers are rising. And so the incidence and unfortunately the mortality rate is expected to increase as well. So right now, pancreatic cancer is the third leading cause of cancer-related death in the U.S., but it's anticipated to become the second by 2020. So it's something where it's definitely going to need a closer eye when we talk about cancer research and awareness.
Okay. Allison, you got anything to add? Go ahead, Robin. I'm sorry.
This is Joyce. We're down to the last 5 minutes of the show. So I just wanted to start summarizing a little bit. And Allison, maybe you can help me with this. if you have a patient who comes to you and says, my doctor says I'm not a candidate for surgery, and I've heard how awful this is, you know, how aggressive it is, what are the best treatments? And, you know, isn't there a standard of care rather than going on a clinical trial, which feels like a long shot, you know? Why would I want to go on a clinical trial at this point?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's actually the case that most doctors agree that the best management for any patient with any type of cancer is in a clinical trial. Usually clinical trials are managed by specialists in that specific disease. They're typically using the standard of care with an experimental treatment. So patients in a clinical trial will never receive a placebo by itself. They'll always receive the standard of care. A lot of doctors recommend clinical trials as the best option. We do recognize that some patients aren't able to participate in trials. They may not be able to travel to a trial, or they may not qualify for another health condition that they have. So we do have information on other treatment options as well, including molecular testing, which is not a treatment option per se, but it's a treatment approach where they can have their tumor tissue tested to determine if there are mutations in their tumor that may predict how well they respond to a treatment. So some patients have mutations that can predict that they respond really well to a given treatment, and that might be their best treatment option.
And is there a bonus for the community if somebody participates in a clinical trial? Am I possibly moving the research forward?
Definitely, yeah. So the clinical trials are the only way to move the needle forward in the disease. Every treatment that's available today went through clinical trials, and it's the only way to find new and better treatments. So people who participate are definitely contributing to patients worldwide, and that they can help them find the best treatment options down the road.
So are there any effective standard of care options for people at the moment? Are there drugs that are being helpful against this kind of cancer?
Yes, there are definitely. So there are treatment options for every stage and type of pancreatic cancer. For people whose disease has spread outside the pancreas, then chemotherapy is most often used. And there are a few different standards that are common for these patients. Everybody responds to treatment differently, so it's hard to say if the treatment will work for a given patient. But there's options out there. So if the first treatment doesn't work or stops working, there may be other options, including another standard of care or a clinical trial.
Okay. Any other summary comments that you would like to leave our listeners with before we say goodbye?
We just always encourage patients to be hopeful. So hope is very important, and every individual patient is different. So that's why we work with people on a case management basis to provide them support throughout their journey and to help them identify things that can be helpful for them in that moment. So there is definitely hope with pancreatic cancer, and new discoveries are being made.
Thank you. Annalisa?
Yeah, I think echoing from what Allison said, you know, from my experience and in my role, I just really encourage patients and families to be advocates for themselves. So, you know, as Allison mentioned, there's always hope. You know, I've been in this role for 2 years now, and I have spoken with people who have, guided their way to having no evidence of disease. And, I've also spoken with people where it's, you know, the end of their journey. And I think regardless of either outcome, I think advocacy for yourself and really believing in your ability to make those connections with healthcare professionals, make those connections with family members, and really just kind of believing in yourself and believing in and survival is very important. So I say to anybody who's affected by this disease, please call our organization because we are more than happy to help you, and we are willing to hold your hand through this journey.
Great, thank you. So you have some really good resources on this call. The Pancreatic Action Network, who's called pancan.org, has a number of wonderful resources, and smartpatients.com also has ways for you to interact with other people on the same journey. So keep your spirits up. I saw on PanCan's list of basic guidance for people who call in, eat well, sleep, keep up your quality of life, keep up your hope, because all of those are very important factors in battling any condition. Robin and Mike, any other final comments?
Well, I'd like to thank Annalise, and also like to thank Allison for joining us today, and thanks to the PanCan for putting this together in such a short period of time for allowing us to talk to them.
Of course, it was such a pleasure.
Well, thank you both, and thank you, Robin and Mike, and we hope that everyone will be aware of pancreatic cancer and help to fight it in our own ways with our friends, with our families, with our organizations that are helping to support this and the research that's going on, and hopefully we will see more progress on pancreatic cancer in the near future. So thank you very much, and thanks to everybody for being with us. We hope you'll be with us again next time. And meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient. Take care.